From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we're bringing you Lake Effect from inside Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee. We'll break down what we know about yesterday's deadly police shooting near the RNC. We'll hear from visitors and vendors who are at Convention Fest at the RNC.
Beer with cheese, and brats, beer and brats. And you know the Midwestern welcome. That is one of the reasons we like to come here. Great city. It's a lot of fun.
We'll hear how businesses in and around the security perimeter are doing. Plus, we'll learn how wastewater management during the RNC could help prevent the spread of illness.
After the RNC, it's going to be great to have that test case of what does it look like when there's a large gathering, 50,000 people in the city.
All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today we're bringing you Lake Effect from inside Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee on the third day of the Republican National Convention. Businesses in and around the perimeter say so far things have been slow. We'll hear from some of them later on. We'll start with this. A Milwaukee man was shot and killed by several out-of-state police officers about a half mile from the perimeter of the RNC yesterday. Police say a man armed with two knives was threatening another unarmed man. Five officers opened fire and the man was killed. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson responded to the shooting at a press conference this morning.
I was saddened by the death yesterday afternoon as a result of a officer-involved shooting. No one wanted this outcome, and I anticipate a full as well as thorough investigation. The deceased individual had family, had friends, and my thoughts certainly are with them. My thoughts are also with the police officers from Columbus, Ohio. I'm sure they did not expect to be drawn into a tragic situation such as the one that they were involved in yesterday. The information we have leaves a clear impression that these Columbus officers, they saved the life of an unarmed man from death or perhaps serious injury in this incident. I know of no other connections to the convention. The location of the shooting was across the freeway, more than three quarters of a mile from the front door of Pfizer Forum. The convention itself has proceeded with relatively few security or safety concerns. In my briefing from the city's Emergency Operations Center just this morning, it was shared that overnight was uneventful, really uneventful from a policing perspective. There were no arrests that happened overnight. During the day, yesterday, some pushing and shoving led to the arrest of one individual.
There are thousands of police officers from other jurisdictions in Milwaukee for the RNC. This shooting has fueled anger from local organizations that questioned having so many out-of-state police coming to Milwaukee. Organizers spoke about this following yesterday's shooting.
In the lead-up to the coalition, the march, and the RNC, we spoke repeatedly with MPD and expressed the concerns of the people of Milwaukee as to what was going to happen with the thousands of police officers and law enforcement agents from around this country that were going to descend on Milwaukee. And they didn't give us a single answer. They told us to trust the process. Well, look at what the process got us. We warned the city.
A vigil was held for the victim last night. Family has identified him as Samuel Sharp, an unhoused man.
What are we going to do about this today?
Like that!
When black lives are under attack, what do we do?
The Milwaukee Area Investigative Team, led by the Greenfield Police Department, is leading the investigation. You can watch for updates on this story at WUWM.com. Business hasn't exactly been booming in downtown Milwaukee so far this week. But customer traffic looks different depending on where the business is located. WUWM's Taryn Powell spoke with businesses inside the RNC perimeter to see what it's been like so far Taryn is joining me now. Taryn, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Joy.
So which businesses did you stop by to get a feel for how much traffic they've seen with the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee this week?
I started at the 3rd Street Market Hall, which is in the soft perimeter of the RNC security zone. It borders the immediate hard security zone on Old World 3rd Street and Wisconsin Avenue. And I stopped by the Goodland Greens Restaurant and Shucker's Crab Shack and Oyster Bar.
All right. Who did you talk to and how did they describe what the impact has been on business this week?
So the first person I spoke with was Kirby Clark, the president of Goodland Greens and Pizza Shuttle. He told me Goodland Greens actually just opened on Monday, the first day of the convention, and he said there was a concerted effort to ensure the shop opened by the time the convention came to town. And even though it had only been a couple of days, he said business was pretty steady.
The logistical requirements are complicated in terms of getting fresh produce here on a timely basis, but everybody that we've worked with at the inspection checkpoints has been really, really helpful. You know, as much as there's confusion and complications with getting through it all, they've been very clear on where we need to go and super kind when it's confusing. And, you know, business has been pretty steady. Yesterday was a little slow as everybody was kind of feeling out what that meant, but today, we've been serving a lot of law enforcement partners, as well as some locals that are, you know, working in the area or just here to see what's going on.
The general manager over at Shucker's Crab Shack and Oyster Bar had some of the same things to say as far as business being steady. His name is Jordan Wolin.
It's been pretty good. Yesterday, we kind of had like a buyout during most of it for the delegates, so we kind of had only them in here specifically for a certain amount of time. But before and after, we had pretty good foot traffic from the security, police, things like that. I think the first day, there was a lot of more nervous energy for people to come down downtown in general. But now it's like day two. Now we're kind of really, it seems like it's all eased down. The checkpoints are a little easier. I think the foot traffic's coming down. We have a lot of our regulars that I've seen since the beginning of the hall in here today. So it's nice to finally see that. And of course, there's lots of big events going on, whether it be the North Carolina Delegate Breakfast that we're doing every day over in Venue 3, or whether or not it's just something, whether like the late night one tonight from about 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., we have a bit of a late one for some high-profile RNC delegates and candidates, things like that. So we'll see how all that goes, see who shows up, see who does a speech. You know, it'd be nice.
I wouldn't say the market hall was packed, but I would say both Kirby and Jordan are accurate in their descriptions of it being steady traffic. Definitely a lot of law enforcement that came through more than anything, media, a few regular folks, but both Kirby and Jordan seemed excited about folks stopping by their restaurants and that Milwaukee was getting this exposure during the RNC.
Sure. Now, being that close to where people are entering the hard security zone probably doesn't help with business. How about businesses in other parts of the security zone? Are they having the same kinds of experiences?
Not exactly. In fact, during a press conference this morning, Mayor Cavalier Johnson mentioned that he's aware that not all businesses near the convention are getting a lot of customers. Here's what he had to say.
I've certainly heard some concerns from businesses that are outside of the immediate convention area. Some have said their expectations have not been met. While it's absolutely true that millions and millions of dollars will be spent in connection with the convention, that money is not necessarily flowing through every corner, every single corner of the economy. I've heard some restaurants and businesses downtown were expecting a little bit more. The same is true of some businesses and neighborhoods near downtown.
That being said, the mayor did still encourage folks to come downtown and enjoy the businesses.
Yeah. Now, what can you tell us about other restaurants that you visited?
Well, once I left 3rd Street Market Hall, I walked one block over to Wells Street and popped into Zankia, a Vietnamese restaurant. It was only a handful of people in there, and Kyla Vang, one of the cashiers, said they prepped so much prior to the RNC, expecting crowds of people to visit their restaurant, but that hasn't been the case so far.
Since last week, we've been expecting a lot of people to be able to come into the restaurant, but because we didn't realize that there was going to be so much security lockdown, the business has been slow. So yesterday, we had very minimal orders. Today has been a lot busier, not as packed as it usually has been, but then we can definitely tell how like the security lockdown and the checkpoints, how that's definitely affected the amount of business that we've been getting within the past few days. Yeah.
Vang told me they prepared double the amount of food a week before, but the barricades were starting to be set up, which also affected business even before the RNC officially kicked off. Those barricades also affected staff coming in, even if they tried to come in earlier than usual.
Now, did Vang share any additional thoughts about the RNC being in town?
She basically told me they weren't concerned with the politics of everything. They were just expecting a lot of people. They've been enjoying the folks who are coming in, though. She talked about meeting people with many different accents and being excited about people trying the food. There was something that stuck out to me that she said, though, which was they also have a vendor inside the immediate security perimeter, which has been getting a ton of business. So that's helping balance out what the physical store is missing out on.
We actually saw Zankia in Convention Fest, and it seems like they might make out fairly with having their physical location and a vendor closer to the convention happenings.
I would say so.
Something else Vang brought up was the barricades around the area being a bit of a burden for staff and customers. Did any other businesses mention the barriers?
Yes. I also stopped in the King and I restaurant around the corner from Zankia on 3rd Street. And the owner, who preferred to be called AP, actually gave me a thumbs down when I asked her how business has been during the RNC.
Usually I close on Monday, and so we expect that, you know, people gonna be like eating food and stuff in it. So we open, and we have about like 20 people total. My to-go is none, zip.
I was in the store around 3 p.m. yesterday, and I think I saw one person sitting being served. AP told me that to-go orders are half the income at her restaurant, and without that, plus the low in-person diners, she's not making enough right now. She seemed very frustrated and disappointed.
Did anyone else come in while you were there?
There was one guy who popped in the middle of our conversation, but he only took a picture of the menu and asked when the restaurant closed for the day. AP said they didn't know how much to prep ahead of the RNC because they didn't know what to expect. But here's what she had to say about how the barricades were impacting business.
They block everything. Nobody can come in. And then the people, they have a limited time. So in order to go through the search and everything, they can't go for another order, so they don't come in this area.
It's safe to say AP is disappointed and not enjoying the RNC so far because it's not bringing her business as she was told it would.
Now, what is she planning to do if things don't pick up?
Yeah, unfortunately, she's thinking of just closing early or not opening at all because she's losing money opening the store, having to use electricity and such, and she's not trying to lose more money. She hopes for better planning if another event this big is coming to the city.
If they're going to do blocking something, the area of... you know, the people that gather, don't hurt the people around it because, like, you're be doing your business. Otherwise, they can tell us to close, then we'll close. You know, will be easier for us.
So, yeah, the outside perimeter of the RNC is hit or miss for some restaurants.
Taryn Powell is a WUWM reporter. Taryn, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Joy.
This year's Republican National Convention is featuring a new event just outside of Panther Arena called Convention Fest. I had a chance to check it out yesterday with my Lake Effect colleague, Excrit Nunez, who is joining me now to chat about it. Excrit, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Joy.
So, Excrit, although much of the day had been pretty overcast, the sun did open up during Convention Fest, and there were a lot of people milling around. Can you actually explain what Convention Fest is?
Yeah, so it's It's in the hard perimeter zone, so it can only be accessed by delegates, guests, and media members, but it's a festival where local businesses can really showcase their work. So there's local artists, there are food vendors, there are bobblehead businesses. There's an array of things that you can find at Convention Fest, and I believe there's over 100 vendors there yesterday.
There were a lot of folks out there, and in some ways it did look like your average festival. It did have some key differences, of course, a lot more security. Can you set the scene for us a bit?
So yeah, everyone there felt pretty safe and secure. It was actually fairly busy, like you mentioned. There were lines to get food, and I was honestly quite surprised. And I only say that because of what's been going on outside of the hard perimeter. It almost feels a little bit like a ghost town. And so walking into this convention fest, I didn't expect so many people walking around and eating from the businesses there, but the spirits were really high. People were really excited to be there. You could feel that. And yeah, people were just happy to be in Milwaukee.
It was a really interesting collection of vendors. You did have some very Wisconsin vendors. You had some cheese curds, of course. You had Visit Milwaukee. You had local distilleries, local breweries. Quite a number of tents for alcohol consumption, although I will say they were not as well attended as your average Wisconsin festival. Looking at the wide array of tents that we saw, what would you say your favorite was?
Well, just to add real quick to what you said, maybe there wasn't a line to the alcohol, but there was a line for the cheese curds. People were so excited to get some cheese from Milwaukee. But I think, honestly, one of my favorite tents, or just one that really stood out to me, was the Bobbletopia tent. And they didn't just have a ton of Donald Trump bobbleheads, but they had over 30 presidents that you could pick from and make your custom bobblehead. That was really interesting that he said he was super busy. We heard from him, one of the vendors.
There were a lot. There was one, of course, from Ripon, Wisconsin. We'll learn more about the Republican Party's roots in Ripon later on this week. They had a little version of the schoolhouse where the party was founded, right next to the tent. And they were all very excited, of course, to come to the convention. Most of them, I think, had not been to one before. So that was fun.
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear about people who had never been to Milwaukee, hear their experiences. People really appreciated the architecture here, or people that haven't been here in a long time and seen the city grow. So it was interesting to hear people's perspectives on the visit here.
Well, let's listen now to a few of the people that we got to meet yesterday.
My name is Georgine Ferris, and I am a delegate from Washington State. I've got my Donald Trump bling on. These are like beaded earrings that look like Trump with the famous hair. I actually made my shirt with the famous hair. And then my jacket, the back of my jacket, you know, it says I'm voting for a felon, convicted felon.
What do you like most about the platform that you guys decided on?
Well, it's different because it's more succinct. It's just sentences instead of like flowery speech, you know, like in documents, poetic speech. I do like that. This one is just bullet point after bullet point, kind of. And so for somebody old school like me, then I'm like, wait a minute, do we still have our strong values? Because that's why I'm a Republican. That's what sets us apart, are our values. And so I feel we've stayed with them. I felt the preamble was okay. You know, it's good. It's just different. And I have to adjust to that. And so, you know, we talked about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, what more can we say? You know, we're going to stand on those three values, which are very good. So people have to just read it and say we didn't lose anything. We're just, it's just more succinct, and we got to just stay committed.
Mark DeSone, the reason we're here is we're promoting the birthplace of the Republican Party, the Little White Schoolhouse in Ripon, Wisconsin. Our team is here lifting up the history of the birthplace of the Republican Party and the importance of it to the Republican Party's future and its roots based on a stand against the expansion of slavery back in 1854. And so we're here at this booth and talking to people just to get them more interested in preserving the history, being part of, you know, what we feel is really important, the basis, the whole basis of why this started. Their first successful candidate for president was Abraham Lincoln. And so when you start thinking about the purpose of the party at the time, Abraham Lincoln, what he had to do to preserve the country, emancipate slaves, it's the basis of this is pretty important. It's been crazy busy. It's been fun talking to a lot of people from all over the country and some other places, actually, who are just here, you know, to be part of it one way or another. So absolutely. Yeah, it's been great. So I don't know that I'll ever have a chance to go to one again. So it's pretty cool to be part of it and see it, you know. I think it's, you know, obviously it's a pride thing for Wisconsin. It's great for the economy, great for the tourism. I've had people come up to me and say, you know, everybody's so friendly here. And I said, well, that's just Wisconsin. That's what's happening here. So it's fun to be part of it. And I think it's great that we could have a convention here.
Tim McGue from New Hampshire. Beer with cheese and brats, beer and brats. And you know, the Midwestern welcome. That is one of the reasons we like to come here. Great city. It's a lot of fun. And I can't believe what you've done with the place. It's been a few years since I've been here, so I had not seen the public market and the whole Third Ward. It's incredibly revitalized. So it's pretty cool. So far, last night, President Trump brought the house down when he decided to show up spontaneously. That was unbelievable. Followed by, right before it, the setup, Senator Tim Scott talked about how the lion roared when President Trump got up from under the pile of Secret Service agents and yelled, fight, fight, fight. That was inspiring, and Senator Scott described it great when he talked about how the lion roared. And then he showed up. He just couldn't stay away from his people. J.D. Vance, Senator Vance, is going to be a great guy, ready to step in at any moment's notice. He's got the military experience. He brings the younger crowd. He's got a lovely wife. He's got a fantastic story. He brings the Midwestern crowd. He's from Ohio, the heartland. I mean, what more do you want? What a balanced ticket, right? He's in the Senate. He knows how to legislate. He'll build bridges. A fantastic choice.
Madan Raj. Our company is Bobbletopia.com, and we brand ourselves as the perfect place to get bobbleheads. We are based in Milwaukee. We had created a Donald Trump bobblehead about 6 months ago. It took quite a bit of time to make it, and it just became available about 2 months ago. And thirdly, the RNC happened to be in Milwaukee. So all of those combined was just the perfect storm in a good way. And so we reached out to the RNC, told them we're interested, and they said, yes, we'd love to have you, and here we are. We've got the traditional President Donald Trump bobblehead. Then we've got a Boxer Trump version. And then we've got the Trumpinator bobblehead, which our partner makes. And, you know, it was made in around 2020 during that election. And the whole branding reason was, if you recall from the Terminator movies, he says, I'll be back. And then finally, we've got the Donald Trump Freedom bobblehead, which is a mashup of the William Wallace character from Braveheart, who fought for Scotland's freedom, based on a true story. That's the newest Trump bobblehead that we have. And so those are four Trump bobbleheads. There's a whole bunch of Trump bobbleheads, which we don't even have here. But when it comes to the record for who's got the most bobbleheads out there, Trump is one of them. He might be the winner. I don't know for sure, but he's up there.
Darren Strooksma. I originally am coming from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but I am representing California here. I'm just supporting President Trump in any way I can, and this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I just could not miss. I unfortunately was not able to come in 2020, so I definitely wanted to come this year because this will be President Trump's last convention, and I want to support him in any way I can because he has supported us through everything that he's been through. It's been an amazing experience. I've met wonderful people here, people who just love this country, love President Trump. I met Governor Glenn Youngkin, Larry Elder, Charlie Kirk. And they're all wonderful people who love this country, and it's just a wonderful once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I will always remember this.
And will you be able to vote this year?
Yes, I will be. My first election, I'll be voting for President Trump.
My name is David Hofer. The name of our company is Wisconsin Fried Cheese Curds. We are promoting the joys of Wisconsin with our food. We've got deep fried cheese curds. We've got not fried cheese curds. We've got grilled cheese. You can add bacon to that grilled cheese. And then we also sell cookies, waters, and lemonade slushies. So I didn't know what to expect because they told us vendors that we were supposed to be open from 2 to 5:30. Which isn't a very long time. So I did the math based on one of my busier events, because we just do fairs, festivals, and community events. We don't have a brick and mortar. And I did the calculations based on that, and I ended up bringing 360 pounds of cheese that we're gonna be frying. I brought 60 pounds of not fried cheese curds, and I brought another 60 pounds of mild yellow cheddar for our grilled cheese. But I think after today, I'm gonna reevaluate, and I might bring a little bit extra tomorrow. And today's been pretty steady. Based on yesterday's sales, I wasn't disappointed at all. It was very compatible to any other event that we partake in. It's not an uncommon question, what is a cheese curd? Or people like, yeah, I heard what cheese curds are, but I don't know what they are. Some come with skepticism, some come with excitement. And then they take their first bite and they give us a thumbs up with smiles on their faces. And that's all we're looking for.
Those were just a few of the people that I spoke with yesterday alongside my colleague Exgrit Nunez, who is joining me here in Panther Arena. Exgrit, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joy.
In about 15 minutes, we'll hear from an artist whose work has been turning heads near the RNC. But first, we'll learn why local scientists are monitoring wastewater during the RNC and what they hope to learn. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers in the Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee. When a large group of people gathers, the chances for spreading illness increases. A local scientist is using the RNC as an opportunity to monitor the spread of illnesses when an additional 50,000 people come to a city. Dr. Sandra McClellan's lab at the School of Freshwater Sciences is surveying Milwaukee's wastewater this week. And while that might sound pretty gross, she tells Lake Effect Sam Woods, it can help prevent the spread of things like the flu and COVID-19.
So during the RNC, your lab will be monitoring wastewater or sewage. And the first question I have is, why?
Yeah, well, we are part of a wastewater surveillance system in the state of Wisconsin. And just as my research kind of started out looking at beach closings and surface waters, we were spending a lot of time looking at sewage as a source of pollution and the pathogens that were carried in sewage. So when the COVID pandemic hit, it was kind of a natural extension of our work to start looking for COVID in wastewater. And we partnered with the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene and the Wisconsin Department of Health Services to really put together a program. And, you know, the State Lab of Hygiene is really the heavy lifters around the state. And we kind of monitor Milwaukee, Racine, Green Bay. Over the last 4 years, we've been monitoring the wastewater for these different, not just COVID, but different respiratory pathogens. So the how we've ended up monitoring for the RNC is it's just an added activity for what we're already doing in the state. Across the state, there are about 40, 45 different municipalities or cities and villages that participate. We get wastewater once or twice a week. We monitor for SARS-CoV-2 and influenza. So this is an activity that's already happening, including in Milwaukee. With 50,000 people coming in, an estimated 50,000 people coming into the city area, we want to understand how some of these signals may change and will, you know, could there be a higher risk with more people congregating and being in the same place?
What it sounds like, if I can paraphrase, is that, you know, this research has been ongoing, something you do all the time, but the RNC is just an opportunity to see like, okay, when we know we have an influx of tens of thousands of people, how does that change things?
Right, exactly. And you know, wastewater surveillance is fairly new. It's just been established, again, over the last 4 years. We've gone from really not knowing what to expect to understanding how the SARS-CoV-2, the COVID, kind of ebbs and flows over the different seasons. But this is one of the first times we're really applying it to a large gathering. So we're not quite sure exactly what to expect, but we do have all the tools in place to be monitoring more intensely during the time of the RNC. So for example, usually we monitor twice a week for the city of Milwaukee, and it's actually the city of Milwaukee that is doing that site now. We help them kind of develop the procedure, and then, you know, they've really applied their technology and their epidemiology to monitoring the city of Milwaukee. So for example, that's done twice a week, and now we're ramping it up to every day just because we want to keep a closer eye on things.
So is the idea that, you know, there are more microbes there are in the water that you can measure the higher levels of disease, or is it a little more complicated than that?
It's a little different. So in regular wastewater, you expect what's shed from humans. So what's shed through the feces or saliva or what sloughs off your skin. So what goes into our wastewater treatment plant is really this biological sample of the entire community. And that's how we can establish how much SARS-CoV-2, how much COVID virus is going around in the community. So if you add maybe 50,000 more people, we're going to just kind of include them in our sample. But if we see kind of levels go up, we can start to, you know, put that with other data, like are people reporting illness or, you know, other kind of clinical data that can help us get a big picture of what's going on. So it's not, wastewater is not really a self-standing, very, you know, very strictly quantitative metric. It's something that enhances other surveillance systems and kind of gives us a warning that we should be looking, you know, in the public health realm for what could be being reported or maybe what's being reported in hospitals or clinics.
After the RNC, come flu and COVID season this fall, can this method be used to warn of rising flu or COVID levels?
Yeah, and it actually is being used for that now. So we have been monitoring the SARS-CoV-2 for 4 years, and then also influenza for almost 3 years, although that data has only recently been made public on the CDC dashboard, but previously it was shared to public health. So this is something that is becoming an established surveillance system. And with people not really testing for COVID anymore, it is a great early warning for cases are starting to rise. Anecdotally, I know a lot of people that will check the Wisconsin dashboard just to understand if there's a lot of COVID in the community, and will use that to kind of inform their own decisions about should I go to this concert? Do I want to go to this large gathering? You know, am I more at risk now if COVID's really high in the community versus other times where it may be lower in the community?
Yeah, this seems like a way of testing for example, COVID in a way that the data's not going to lie, right? And it's not going to, you know, you're not relying on people having to go in and take tests. You're just asking people to live their everyday lives, and you can track it from that. I'm curious, though, how much time between measurement of wastewater and being able to report actionable results or findings?
You know, for the RNC, the data should be turned around 24 to 48 hours, 48 at the most. Most of the time in there is actually just transporting the sample, you know, collecting the sample for 24 hours and then transporting it to the laboratory. Once it's in the laboratory, it really can be done fairly quickly within, you know, one work day before the results are finished. So when you look at kind of start to finish, it may look like, you know, 24, 48 hours. But in fact, most of that time is not on the laboratory end. It's on the actual collecting the 24-hour sample. And that's really important because you want a representative sample of the whole community. If you just take one quick sample, it's only a snapshot of maybe a subset of people.
You've mentioned sharing results with the health department and the CDC, but will research on the impact of the RNC in this realm be publicly available? And if so, when?
So specifically for the RNC, the city of Milwaukee is really taking the lead. So it's the Milwaukee Health Department that has set up kind of this whole cross-cutting surveillance team that is much more than wastewater surveillance. And they're really keeping a close eye on several different aspects. So the wastewater surveillance, that data that's being generated by my lab, also the City of Milwaukee Health Department and the State Lab of Hygiene, we put all of that together, and then that goes back to kind of the lead agency, the City of Milwaukee Health Department, and they really put all the pieces together. So after the RNC, it's going to be great to have that test case of what does it look like when there's a large gathering, 50,000 people in the city. And I think that they have done such a great job of putting together a really solid surveillance program where many different aspects will be tracked.
Is this a research method of measuring wastewater and connecting that to disease and public health, is that common in places outside of Milwaukee?
Definitely. This is actually, it's a worldwide effort. And it really started early on in the pandemic, like March and April of 2020. There were labs around the country, my lab, the State Lab of Hygiene, you know, California, North Carolina, New York, where we got together as a group of scientists and started talking about these methods and how to get it implemented. And it was probably one of the most collaborative processes I've been involved in. So the CDC has really taken the lead on pulling all these states together and creating a national wastewater surveillance system. And it goes by the acronym NEWS. And there's a great community of scientists that really share how to improve the testing and interpretation of data. And that's been an ongoing effort, again, for the last 4 years.
Have there been any findings either in Milwaukee or elsewhere that have come from this type of research that excite you as a researcher?
That's a great question, because there's been several times that we've looked at the data and kind of been surprised. One of the things that really surprised me was how closely the wastewater tracks with what we see in the community. And we saw that when there was a lot of testing during the pandemic. So now when we see these increases, like in fall or in that winter spike we see right around December and January, we know that it's really happening, that we have had the testing previously has shown how it correlates to wastewater, and now we're not testing. So when we see those spikes, it's troubling to see it, but at the same time, it's exciting because that's not information we ever had before. Nobody's used wastewater prior to the pandemic on such a large scale to understand what diseases are going through the community. And it will go, I think, besides influenza, RSV, which is another one that's being monitored, and SARS-CoV-2, there's other viruses that we can track, like norovirus that causes a stomach flu. And that is another case where, you know, I want to know, is there a lot of norovirus going around? So if my kids get sick or if I'm feeling ill, I can go, oh, I probably caught what's going around. So it's exciting as a scientist to see now we have this whole new layer of information that we just didn't have in the public health realm previously.
Well, Dr. McClellan, thank you so much for your research and so much for joining me on Lake Effect.
Yeah, Sam, great to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Sandra McClellan is a professor of ecosystem health at the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee. She spoke with Lake Effect Sam Woods. Now, the official name of this event is the Make America Great Once Again Convention. And the Trump campaign, along with the Republican National Committee, have given themes to each day. Yesterday, on the day Columbus police officer shot and killed a Milwaukee man, the theme was Make America Safe Once Again. Today, it's Make America Strong Once Again. A couple blocks from the RNC, there's an interactive art display in a window that's been turning heads. We'll tell you about its message on climate change next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. We're bringing you today's show from the Panther Arena on the third day of the Republican National Convention. I'm Joy Powers. Storefront windows in a building downtown have been converted into art installations about climate change during the RNC. The display has drawn the eyes of those bustling around the convention at the Germania Building at the corner of Wells and Plankinton. The exhibit connects the dots between climate change, extreme weather, and the role of gas and oil industries. Multidisciplinary creator and artist Annie Saunders is behind the installation. Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez paid the installation a visit and spoke with her about it.
Can you kind of tell me how it came together then? What was the motivation and how did you start to like draw this up? Did you know that you had the storefront windows that you were kind of build out and where did your mind go from there?
Sure. So Climate Power came to me and said, we want to do something as close as possible to the RNC, as visible as possible, and we want it to be about these two issues, the relationship of politicians to the oil lobby and the nature of survival from extreme weather. And they came with the idea of dioramas. So they were like, we think it's like something like dioramas, like the kinds of things that you see at the Natural History Museum, but it's depicting, you know, real life scenes from survival of extreme weather. And I was just so compelled by that idea because I started to think about what is the essence of a diorama, like what is the essential quality of that type of aesthetic in particular, a life-size glass room with a scene behind it. And I thought, like, those are usually, where do we recognize that aesthetic from? It's from museums, it's from often history museums, and it's like representing something that has happened in the past and isn't happening anymore. Like, this already happened and it's not happening now, and therefore we need to show it what it was like when it was happening. Here's like cavemen in a diorama or mastodons or whatever. And so I decided that, their idea really inspired me to create these dioramas. I thought, how can we add something to the aesthetic of a diorama to make it really about, it's like at first you think you're looking at something that you recognize, a recognizable aesthetic, like a museum aesthetic, and then you see that something about it is like not quite right. And so the priority was to be as close as possible to the convention, so that's why we're downtown, and to kind of get as much cross traffic from that as possible, and then to make images that would really stop people in their tracks.
This is audio, so let's go try to stop people in their tracks. And I would love to go through this with the artists and kind of talk about in detail what's going on.
So,
yes.
The important thing right now is that we just see these ticker signs. Mm-hmm. So there's a few components to this installation or these installations. There's telling the reality of extreme weather. There's making something that represents the relationship between politicians and the oil and gas companies. And then there's something that sort of ties it all together. And so these LED ticker signs, it kind of takes something recognizable to catch the eye at first. And then the second look is when you realize that something is different.
That was the exact reaction I had when I'm like, I walked by this place and I was like, oh, this seems new. And then I took a step back. I'm like, oh, this is something else.
That's so gratifying to hear. Thank you.
Job done.
I love it. So the LED signs are like reminiscent of freeway signs, government messaging, also reminiscent of stock tickers, also reminiscent of news headlines. So it's like, we know this object, we know this aesthetic. How can we put something into a known aesthetic that is trying to access folks in a different way? And in my interviews, I did a bunch of interviews for this project with people who are surviving extreme heat, and the object of the air conditioner just came back again and again in the conversations. I feel like maybe if you're not in a situation of extreme heat survival, it just looks like an object. It's just a window AC unit. But people I talked to in Arizona again and again said, if you can't cool down, you're not going to make it. Like, if you don't have cooling, you won't survive. The air conditioner working is a matter of life and death. Truly. They said those words a lot. And so I wanted the performer in this room, and there's three different performers that cycle through here. which is also really important to me, that we have, you know, we don't cast one person as if to say this is the type of person that's living through this kind of scenario. It affects certain populations more than others, without a doubt, but it's happening to all of us. So in the course of the day, you see three different, very different looking people come through this room. The other thing that's happening in here, which is all this melting and distressed objects, is based on my research into the effect of extreme heat on plastics and vinyl. And so I pulled photographs of plastic garbage cans melting outside, and water bottles in people's cars just melting into like puddles, and vinyl siding on people's houses just like melting off into nothingness. And I just thought, how can we translate though? That is how extreme heat affects these materials. What is a type of room that has a lot of these types of materials in it? And also at the same time, I was hearing about, again, the populations that are most affected by extreme heat, which are the elderly and young children. And so I thought, oh, it's interesting that like the type of materials that are most affected by extreme heat, like plastics and stuff, are the objects that are most marketed to some of the most vulnerable people to extreme heat. And so I decided that this room should be a kid's playroom, and we melted a lot of these objects. But now we have the last real life window, which is about flood destruction.
And where did the motivation come? I know besides just extreme heat, but to show flooding with an actor as well.
Yeah, I just wanted those two rooms, both of the dioramas about extreme weather, that every single detail of them is taken from real life. Just felt really important to me to have a real person living through what the rooms were representing. There's water dripping from the ceiling into a pot right here that the actors take in and out with it. They have to like empty them out into different containers. Something that came up in conversations with flood survivors was just the inundation of paperwork. So they get, you know, insurance paperwork, there's FEMA, there's bills, there's all this, you know, not only are they overwhelmed by the destruction of where they live, they also have to deal with floods of paperwork.
I think the thing that always strikes me about flooding is just thinking about all of your personal belongings just being just soaked with flood water and everything that comes along with it. And I think you've really shown that here, along the walls. Books are flood damaged. Like you said, you've got the water and the pots on the floor. The bills are everywhere. Some of the precious heirlooms that are just the irreplaceables on the ground, like this family photo over here. And it just gives the sense of chaos.
Totally.
And speaking of that, like, you're here at the RNC, what has the reaction been from people like checking out your work?
So we've had everything from, we've had marches go past here, protest marches. We've also had like we had like all of a sudden, it wasn't a march, it was just people going somewhere, but like 400 people all in like MAGA gear just walked past on the way from something to something else suddenly. So we've had moments of like huge crowds of people, moments where it's really quiet, people walking by here, you know, filming and saying it's all bullshit, and people walking by here and saying like, yeah, I'm a Republican and I'm a Trump voter, but like my house flooded. Like, I recognize this situation. So we've had like this really varying, like folks who agree with it and like it and like that it's here and feel like it represents them and their real life, and also think it's bullshit and they hate it. And sometimes those are the same person, you know?
It's wild.
Totally.
The other thing that I just want to ask you before I let you go, and thank you so much for being generous with your time, is that this isn't a place, too, that isn't accessible to a lot of Milwaukeeans right now.
Yeah.
One, because they're avoiding the space because of this event, and either it's a place that they don't feel safe or it's not accessible. But this is public art, and this is really for the people, it feels like. What would you say to people that couldn't get down here that you would like them to take away from this diorama, living diorama with these actors, Milwaukeean actors? Let's give them a shout out. What would you like to say to them about this work and why it matters to them?
The thing I would like to say to like folks in Milwaukee is that it's been such a pleasure doing this here, and people who do live here, live in this building, you know, have come out and just like talked to us and thanked us for doing it and told us that they, you know, really appreciate it and are kind of speechless about like being right here living downtown during the RNC. And And Milwaukee has been a really beautiful and welcoming place to do this work. And I, in terms of like what I hope people take away from just walking by is just that they, I hope that they feel the interconnectedness of all these issues. I mean, that's what this is really trying to do, is show these separate scenes that are all deeply and delicately interconnected in a way that affects all of us. And what they're trying to do, what I'm trying to do with these windows, is kind of, maybe people are on their way from something to something else, and like you said, like, it stops them and there's a moment where they kind of feel something about things that maybe they usually just read about in the newspaper.
Annie Saunders is an artist from Los Angeles. She spoke with Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez. And that is today's Lake Effect here from the Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of today's conversations, or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll be back here at Panther to explore what kind of sway a vice presidential pick can have on voters. Plus, we'll learn about the roots of the Republican Party that started right here in Wisconsin. That is all tomorrow at noon, right here on Lake Effect. Stay tuned to Lake Effect and WUWM all week long for coverage of the Republican National Convention. On listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.